Hello, Monarch fans, and welcome to another episode of Hudson Homers. I am Gary, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always, CB Wilkins. CB, how are you doing today?
Man, I am fantastic. Let me tell you, I'm sure it's a complete coincidence, but the time change was wonderful. The time change, because the weather was just perfect this whole week. I saw baseball, you know, ODU had five games. I even went and saw one of our commits playing for Cape Henry against Grassfield on Thursday. So just nothing but wonderful weather.
Baseball weather was absolutely back this weekend. I made it down for the games on Friday and Sunday. And aside from a little bit of a rain shower in the middle of the game on Friday, it was beautiful. And I was reminded on Sunday to bring sunscreen for the future, because standing in Rally Alley, you get a nice tan on the left side of your face while you're watching the game. So I've got that going for me this week.
Yeah, this is the time of year I just kind of let myself get burned, and then come summertime, you throw the sunblock on. You have to get the nice tan early when the sun's not actually that bad. It's probably terrible for my skin, but, you know, people tell me I look young, so I guess I'm fine.
I celebrated St. Patty's Day with my Irish roots getting nice and sunburned at a baseball game, yeah. So I feel like it's a tradition.
Just turning from you go from pale white to extremely red, then right back to pale white. That's how it works.
That's been the cycle. It wasn't like that when I was a kid, but it definitely is now. So I can't wait to be back at the Bud here in a couple weeks for the next home series to show off what half of my tan face looks like. But 3-2 week this week for the Monarchs. You know, book ended with losses, but some really, really great baseball in between there. I think we got to start right off the bat talking about the game that we probably do not want to talk about, and that was Tuesday's loss to Princeton 10-8. Not ideal.
Got to be honest. I mean, the word for that one is embarrassing. I mean, Princeton's a Division I team, but let's be real, they're not anywhere close to the same level as ODU. They got good guys, good players playing hard, and you know what? They came out and just played a better game. They played very solid. They got their hits when it was time to get their hits, and good on them. They had just gotten beat like 24-8 the day before. So good for them. They came out and took on a very good ODU team and just played really well. So, I mean, that's our guys did not show up. And I hope it ended up being kind of a wake up call and kind of a reality check for them.
Yeah, because that's definitely a loss that can come back to haunt you later if you're talking postseason play, because that will definitely drag down a lot of your chances to either host or, you know, be a 2 seed or a 3 seed, get a maybe more favorable region or something like that. You know, thankfully it was non-conference, but I still think there's a drag there. But it just seemed like our pitching was off that day. I mean, they ended up with 15 strikeouts, which is good, but they gave up 8 earned runs, 12 hits, and they gave out 7 free passes either through walks or hit by a pitch. Offense, I mean, put up 8 runs. That's not a bad day, but I think you'd want to see a little bit more against a team like Princeton.
Yeah, the offense, you know, eight runs is great, but then in the late innings when it was time to, like, okay, we actually came back in this game, and we have an opportunity to here to get some runs and go ahead. They just couldn't quite string stuff together. So, you know, yeah, I mean, we definitely saw the offense started clicking there on Tuesday, and it kind of kept clicking up until Sunday, but. You know, overall, just not what you want to see out of a game that you really should. I mean, 3 errors again, you know, just not what you want to see out of a game against Princeton.
And I had it up and I was, you know, kind of watching it on my phone. And when we got to 8-7 in the seventh, I was like, all right, yeah, here we go. It's time to jump ahead and put this game away. But, I mean, Princeton came right back, got a 2-run home run in the top of the ninth. And that was kind of curtains for us. But
yeah, more power to them. They really played well. They put up really good at-bats and just – they're a really well-coached team. They got Scott Bradley, who's been there forever. My buddy Joe Homaker, the ODU alum, is a pitching coach, so it was great to get to hang out and talk with him for a while. He's still teaching a class at Princeton, so we like to say taking his 3.1 GPA at ODU and really devaluing the Princeton education.
I'll gladly take an ODU alum that's teaching at Princeton. That makes me feel a little bit better. That game did seem to serve as a little bit of a wake-up call, because they come back the next day and they do what we expected them to do, and they won the game 12-1.
Yeah, that day was in 12-1 in 7 innings, which I guess they had decided ahead of time. In a non-conference game, you have to decide ahead of time if you're going to do the run rule, and so I guess they did, which is good. You know, at that point, Princeton was playing a lot of days, and anytime you're going to play 5 games in a week, you try to shorten the games if you can. So They did. They played really well. Some pitchers who had not even really gotten a lot of opportunities, or some no opportunities, came out and pitched really well in that game. So Wednesday's game was just all around fantastic.
We just kind of jumped on him, you know, right off the bat with Stephen Meyer getting on with a walk, steals second, steals third. Luke hits a double, and we're kind of off and running there. Kenny Lavari, Jackson Tone, both with three RBI games. Alex Boucher goes 3-for-4. And I saw the picture that you put out, I think, on social media earlier today of Tyser getting hit by a pitch. And it did look like it got him right in the nose.
I didn't even share the picture. It's actually two frames before that. It hit him on the knee and then bounced straight up and got him in the nose. And he got cut on his face, I think because of his nose and his sunglasses smashing into each other. And just it got cut in the nose. He was bleeding pretty good right there when it happened. He's okay. I mean, I saw him yesterday. It didn't look like he really had a cut barely on his nose. But yeah, that was just, it could only happen to Tyser, I think, right? Just getting hit. I mean, how do you get hit twice by the same pitch is pretty terrible.
Just some bad luck there with that ball bouncing around like that. A couple good pitching notes, because the pitching obviously improved a ton in that second Princeton game. Garrett Harker gets the win, doesn't give up any runs. The whole pitching staff only gave up 4 free passes for that entire game, which I thought was really critical. Trone comes in, Ben Moore comes in, locks it down. And then we get the debut of Marco Lavari with 2 innings pitched. Only marks on him. He had a walk and he hit a batter. But other than that, looked pretty good.
He looked really dominant. And it's not easy to go out and, I mean, they've been playing about a month at this point, and he hadn't gotten into a game, you know, showing up every day and just staying in shape and throwing bullpens. And so it's a big deal. And on top of that, it's your first ever appearance. You're nervous. You know, he's first time he's getting to play with his brother there at third base, you know. So, I mean, that was a big deal for Marco. That was pretty awesome to see. And Harker, you know, Harker is he's a very good pitcher. I had forgotten he actually got a concussion. I think it was back in the fall. It might have been in the spring. I don't remember when it was. But he took a line drive off the back of his head. And so that's kind of been what's kind of affected him. He was a guy who probably was looking at being, you know, part of the weekend rotation and still may end up being in it. But he's working his way back, and so it's good to see. I think he's going to start again tomorrow against Richmond. But he really looked good that day. He came out. He actually told me he kind of dinged up his ankle on the first pitch. He kind of just slipped off the rubber a little bit. So doing what he did, knowing that he was pretty much hurting every pitch he threw.
Impressive performance by Garrett, and I think that's really positive to see that in the midweek too, of guys when they're getting that opportunity and making the most of it. But just seemed like a different team coming out there in that second game against Princeton. And I know I talked to Coach Fimwood after the game on Sunday and just kind of asked if that was a wake-up call. And he said, you know, well, I hope so. And I made it clear that couldn't play any worse than that. So you can see the full quote at odumarcus.com on the post-game recap from the game yesterday. But speaking of Marco's brother at third, Kenny Lavari, he is our guest later in the program. We're going to get his thoughts on his brother's pitching performance, along with a few other things and what his season has been like so far. But glad to see the guys rebound in a big way to get that, because that could have turned south in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you want to do. You say, look, we took it on the chin, and you might even say they took him for granted. I mean, honestly, you sometimes, I think it's happened to him in years past. They played some teams and they took, I think it was 1 week toward the end of a year. I think it was 2 years ago. They played William & Mary and BMI, and they got beaten both games by teams they should have obliterated. So it's one of those that I think it's the mark of a strong team. It's nothing, you know, it's a shame that they had to get embarrassed a little bit, but then to come back strong 3 days in a row in run rule teams is pretty great.
That was definitely an impressive bounce back. And if you're going to get embarrassed, I'd rather do it mid-March rather than, you know, mid-May when things start getting a little bit tighter. But they carried that momentum right into the game on Friday, ripping off 6 in the first inning against Georgia Southern, who, like, I don't know if they're going to be a bottom half Sun Belt team. I think they're actually pretty good. They just may not have played some great baseball, and we ambushed them on Friday and Saturday.
They're really good. Apparently, one of their better pitchers got hurt and is out for the year. So I think there's a little bit of that kind of mentally affects you as a team. But they are a good team. That kid Tate, the leadoff hitter, we held him down. What was it, 0-for-4? I think he only had a hit all weekend. But he's 2-for-4 in the middle game. He's a very good hitter that didn't do much this weekend. But that's again more of a testament to our pitching. Yeah, so he was 2-for-12 on the weekend. And that's not who that kid is as a hitter.
We talked about him in previewing the Georgia Southern weekend on the last episode, talking about, you know, he's the guy you got to get out. He's their spark plug. If you can get him out, you can do good things. And they did that, especially on Friday. I mean, 0-for-4, he's not even getting on base for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you want. Our pitching staff was dominant this weekend. I mean, to be frank, would you only give up 4 runs over the weekend, you should win all 3 games. So that was our hitters just didn't take care of them on Sunday, but they certainly did Friday and Saturday. I mean, like I said, just getting off to a 6-0 start and then a 4-0 start on Saturday. I mean, that's you couldn't ask for much more than your top guys just going out and just hammering them. I mean, to the point where I think we batted around on Saturday too on the first inning. I mean, that's just, you couldn't ask for much more than that.
And that's what some teams have been able to do to us on those weekend series. And we kind of got to flip the script this weekend. And I was really happy to see it because, you know, you're getting up 6 runs when on a weekend series, when you've got all your arms healthy and ready to go. It's tough to overcome that and to have that bounce back. But I think you said it on the Extra Innings podcast with Coach Finwood and Pierce, talking about just put the damn ball in play. Yeah. And I think you're going to put that on a shirt. Well, I mean, that's how this started. I mean, Kyle Edwards hits kind of a pop fly behind first base that the wind has some fun with, and it drops in. He's on second, and then we end up kind of taking off from there with Luke Waters getting an RBI single, Boucher driving in 2, and then Maverick Stallings started second base all weekend, caps that inning with a 3-run bomb to right center, hit it perfectly into the chemistry building wind tunnel. And 6-0 through 1. Pretty good start.
Yeah, Maverick's a really, really good baseball player. He's I feel like in the field a little bit struggling, but I know and I trust our coaches enough to help him with those things. And I think now he's kind of gotten the bat back to where he should be. Like I said, had a great weekend. He's a really good ball player. And yeah, there was a lot of just put the ball in play this weekend. I didn't have as much on Sunday, which is what happened on Sunday. You see the results. So that was – I was excited to see that. I hope that does keep being a theme for him. You know, I mean, I said it all weekend, these guys are not big leaguers. Again, Georgia Southern has some very good ball players. They made some great plays out there, but they're not big leaguers. There were a few that were kind of routine plays they threw away. So if you put the ball in play, these are college kids. Make them sweat.
And we've been looking for some stability at second base and also left field. And we'll talk about left field in a little bit. But I think Maverick went a long way to put himself in the driver's seat for starting normally at second base. I mean, he ended up this week going 6-for-15 with a home run. He had at least one double, drove in 4 runs, really just a solid performance. And I think this is kind of that week where you can go and grab some of those positions playing against the conference opponents. And I feel like Maverick did a really good job of staking his claim there at second.
Yeah, there's a few spots we've been dying for somebody to establish himself. So it was great to see that. And to go back to the pitching for a second, you know, this was Finney kind of switched things up, had Jay Cassidy start the game and then bring Hollibitz in relief. And I mean, you talk about pushing all the right buttons. I mean, Jay, 2 2/3, only gave up 1 run and looked really good doing it. And then John Hollibitz came out of the pen. It looked like the John Hollibitz that we all know. I think, again, he just needs that rhythm about the bullpen. He needs that adrenaline. You know, 4 1/3 innings, only no runs, 1 hit, no walks, 5 strikeouts. I mean, that's the guy you expect John Hollibitz to be. So if that's what it takes is Jay coming out and getting up started, get him a little off balance, then John comes out, blows him away. Man, that's a weapon. That's something else.
Hollibitz was electric on Friday. I mean, that was kind of what we got used to seeing of him coming out of the pen and closing out games. He was like that, but for 4 innings. And if that's the way it has to be on Fridays to get the win, I am good with that because that is a weapon. And you hit the nail on the head with pushing the right buttons and getting the guys in spots where they feel the most comfortable. I was really excited to see that opener plan work so well with those guys and see Hollibitz return to form. Cause he, I mean, he's a fantastic pitcher. He is just hasn't had his best stuff to start the year, but hey, no better time to start peaking than the beginning of conference play.
Yeah. I mean, that's the guy that had all the scouts in the Cape Cod League excited, has all the scouts coming out Fridays. I mean, he's a dude. He's a guy. I think, you know, he's got more in his tank. He's already out there throwing 94 to 96. And he can hit. We know he can hit 100 because he's done it. Get the engine revving right, the blood flowing the right way for him. That's exactly. I love the move. It was great how perfectly that worked out.
And obviously it was a little bit shorter game because of the run rule. But Vincent Becerra came in for that last inning. pitched a clean one, only needed six pitches to get three outs. I mean, that's the model of efficiency right there.
Love
that. And then be able to do that and save some other arms for later. But had some home runs throughout this game too, which definitely want to talk about with dollars for dingers. You know, Maverick Stallings obviously hit that one in the first, but then we had one from Luke Waters, one from Alex Boucher. Really not even like home run type swings. It's just putting a good swing on the ball and driving it out of the ballpark. Wind was helpful on Friday too, I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's exactly what you want. You know, Luke and Alex have probably been our two most consistent hitters this year. They've been the guys that kind of, you know, they've been around 300. They might go up and down between, you know, 340 to 313, depending on the weekend. But they you know, pretty consistently are getting about one out of every three times the plate getting a hit. And they are hitting the ball hard and having good swings and good stuff's happening. And so it's just, it's really nice to see both those guys just go out and be the players that they are and be that really consistent force in the lineup. It's good. It's just great. We need that.
Yeah, absolutely. And our dinger count now in the year is at 14. So we got 14 home runs for dollars for dingers. And then bucks for bags, we are 42 stolen bases. We're 42 for 49. So still stealing bases at a great clip. Steven Meyer still 10 for 10 on the season with stolen bases, which is just ridiculous, especially since he's stolen third a couple times.
Yeah, I was actually trying to look through some recent stats of years, and I saw they already have more stolen bases this year than they did in 2019 as a whole. Seems unlikely that we're going to get the team record. The team record was 151 back in 1985. They were just running like wild back then, but I think we're going to, I think by far have the most that anybody's had in years. And the single season leader, again, probably nobody's coming close. Kevin Gibbs had over 40, like three different times, all three of his years. But in recent years, Connor Myers in, I think 15, had 20 steals. So I definitely think that either Luke or Steven Meyer can match that 20. So they can be kind of the more recent ODU stolen base leaders.
And Luke has been very impressive this year. I mean, yeah, he's got three home runs, which is tied for the team lead. He's driven in 19 runs, which is also tied for the team lead. But he's 11 for 12 stealing bases on top of that. You can't ask for a whole lot more from your three-hole hitter there.
And Luke is not fast. I'm not saying that to be mean to him, but he's not. You watch him run, you don't think like, oh man, that guy's so fast. He's just really, really smart. He's a really, really smart, really good baseball player. He knows how to read things. He knows how to take his lead, and he knows how to be quick. And so it is fun watching the guy who is not, you know, just like, oh man, nobody can stop him fast.
He definitely understands how to time a pitcher. He motors around those bases and he puts us in a good position for the guys down the lineup to have good RBI potential. And that's really what the philosophy is this year. It's put the ball in play, get on, get over, get in. And we saw that play out really all week except for Sunday. That was the only really bad offensive day that we had. You know, I was not able to watch the game live on Saturday. I was out and about with some things, but I thought that there was something wrong with either my phone or the live stats link, because I looked down and it's 11-1 in the seventh. And I was like, what? No way we did that two days in a row. Kind of blew my mind there.
Yeah, Saturday was fun, man. I mean, that was, you know, I wasn't really able to get there Friday because of the time change and then the weather. But Saturday, you know, we're dancing in the dugout. We got guys doing, they all got a bunch of haircuts. They're all doing new haircut celebrations. That was a fun, fun baseball game to be there as an ODU fan. And just seeing the guys, that's the kind of, you hope they have bring that kind of joy even when they're behind, because they got to believe themselves that they're going to be ahead. So that if you can kind of bottle that energy, man, you're going to have something special for the team.
And it was a similar blueprint. You know, we didn't score six in the first, but we got four, which I'll also take four. But I mean, it's 11-0 in the fifth after a three-run home run by Kenny Lavari, solo shot for Tyser. And I mean, we just really took the wind out of their sails on that Saturday. And I'm glad the guys got to enjoy it with their fancy new haircuts. Hopefully those hats stay on. But just a lot of fun there. And I mean, Kenny Lavari goes 2 for 3 on the day, drives in five runs with a home run and a double. He has absolutely come on here in the last 2 weeks. And I think we're all very glad to see him getting that bat hot again.
Yeah, Kenny is really, he's turned around. I mean, he was definitely having those kind of in-between at-bats where he was taking the good pitches and swinging to the bad pitches and chasing things. And now he's locked in. You can see he's waiting for the ball and he's driving the ball. I mean, even when he's making outs, they're really good outs.
Yeah, Kenny has really come on here in the last couple weeks. I mean, this week alone, he's 5-for-14 with a home run, drove in 9 runs, drew 5 walks, really just having quality at bats. And the pitching again on Saturday was fantastic. I don't know if we did technically an opener approach. I mean, we kind of did. Dylan Brown got the start, went 3 2/3, gave up no earned runs and just one hit. I thought he threw pretty well. Then Kellen comes in with the Raptor and gets the strikeout of the only batter that he faced. And Pond and Ransom clean it up on the back end. Just end-to-end, great pitching again on Saturday.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I don't know that Dylan was necessarily an opener, but he kind of acted that way. I still personally would like to see him throw a little bit more in that game, but he didn't have his best stuff. I'll be honest. Dylan, the fact that he threw 3 2/3 and gave up no runs really tells you how he was fighting through, because I think he didn't have his best stuff and Pond did not have his best stuff. And, you know, Pond 2 2/3 only gave up 1 run. And so both of them really were fighting it. You could tell they just, neither one of them really was able to throw it exactly where they wanted, exactly how they wanted. But again, they got through it. And then Kellen, like I said, came with the Raptor and got his guy, and Lincoln came in, you know, to close the game. He got himself the save in the 11-1 game. No, he didn't. But he, you know, came in, did what he needed to do. And so that, you know, that was a great performance, especially for the fact that the guys were not dominating. I mean, you can see in 7 innings, we only had 6 strikeouts, right? And 3 walks and 3 hit-by-pitch, you know, so it was dominant pitching that was not dominant, which is excellent. Yeah,
they were able to avoid that big blow up meltdown kind of ending where they give up 3, 4, 5 runs. They were able to get out of the jams, both Dylan and Brandon later in the game. But I mean, how about Kellen Davis? I mean, coming on there in the fourth, yeah. 3 pitches, gets the strikeout. I mean, back to the dugout, your day is over. Pretty good stuff there from the Raptor, man.
I mean, he's up to, 9 appearances in 20 games. He's only thrown 5.1 in. So, you know, he's barely, you know, an out each time, but he's got 9 strikes. He's just doing great. Again, for a guy, he's a redshirt sophomore. He's been around, you know, didn't pitch at all his first year, barely pitched last year. I mean, he only got, 4 games, and they were kind of toward the end of the year. So the guy who's just worked. I mean, maybe the most athletic kid on the team. And, you know, having a specialist who can come in and get an out when you need an out, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's that stopper role, I think is what they call it now in the pros, where you can just bring him in, get the out, get out of the inning, and go from there. And whether he's a stopper or a setup closer, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's coming in and doing some great work on the mound.
Well, that was the role they've actually, it's not, you can't do it in the big leagues anymore, because in the big leagues you have to face 3 guys. But that was, they were calling it, if you're left-handed, it was a loogie, a lefty one-out guy. And a Rugi, a righty one out guy. He's a Rugi at this point.
Well, I guess we can still use that in college, at least to end an inning anyway. But yeah, just another great performance from the pitching staff. Good to see them shake off a bad performance on Tuesday against Princeton and come back to really give 4 strong pitching appearances in a row.
And, you know, going to the hitting side, again, talking about a guy who's been here, it's his 3rd year here. And has had to put a lot of work in to get himself on the field. How about Bryce Jones getting his first start of his college career after getting his first hit the night before?
It was great to see that. He was kind of the dark horse there to go into left field, got inserted into the game about halfway through on Friday, ends up being the walk-off run to clinch the run rule. And then, you know, casual 2-double day on Saturday.
As a kid, he redshirted his freshman year. Barely played last year. I mean, I think he maybe got 3 or 4 at bats this year. Before Friday, before this weekend, had maybe 3 or 4 at bats. I don't know if he even had that many. He might have had 2 and only got in a couple of games. And then all of a sudden gets a start on Saturday and Sunday and had 3 hits over the weekend, 2 doubles. I mean, again, great kid. He's one of those kids. He's right there with Kyle Edwards. I've been watching him play since he's about 14. Just a phenomenal kid. Really talented ball player. It's amazing getting to see him get a chance to play. And
Coach Finwood echoed those statements after the game on Sunday, just talking about, you know, he's a veteran guy that hasn't played a ton since he's been here, but he's been in the program for 3 years. He understands what they're looking for. Great kid, fantastic teammate, all of those things. So it kind of seems like left field may be his to lose at this point. At the very least, he's in the driver's seat to take over on a full-time basis, but good to see that. I know I talked to his dad a good bit in Rally Alley during every game. So excited to see him. I think his mom and I believe his girlfriend were there in Rally Alley as well. Sorry if I got you in trouble there. But they were excited to see him get in the game, get on base, and of course score what ended up being the walk-off run there on Friday. So just good to see these guys start to emerge and take advantage of those opportunities when they are put into the game to potentially get them more opportunities down the road.
You know, Bryce is exactly the kind of guy that you want on a college team. Like I said, it's his third year in the program, so he's a junior baseball sophomore. But he, you know, he was coming to the ballpark every single day, particularly his first year redshirting, knowing, like, I'm not going to play. Like, he's walking up, like, I'm sure he probably doesn't even check the lineup most days. He know, like, at best, I might get to pinch run at the end of the game. I might get to come out and play the outfield at the end of the game, maybe. But he showed up every single day. I mean, if you saw Bryce every day, you think he was the starting, you know, left fielder batting third every day. Like, he is a kid that just shows up, has a ton of energy. It's very clear he loves his teammates. It's very clear he loves baseball. And, you know, having those kind of guys, I mean, John Keane, who is our current volunteer coach, when he was on the team as both a catcher and a pitcher, you know, he was that coach showing up every day. You're there for your teammates. You're there to bring energy. And, you know, you're not one of these guys like, well, I'm not playing, so I'm going to pout. I'm going to be an energy vampire. It's like, no, I mean, having these guys that are just really good teammates, I mean, that's a huge thing. And so they're the kind of guys everybody roots for.
And you could see the dugout reaction when he got his hits, yeah. Especially on Friday. They were excited for him. And you can see that being a good teammate showing through there very clearly.
Yeah, it's great. I would love nothing more than see him take a chokehold on left field and just dominate the rest of the year.
Yeah, that him and Maverick. And then, you know, another kind of adjustment, very subtle one that we saw over the weekend, is that Evan Holman was behind the dish for all three of these conference games. And according to Coach Finwood after the game, that is the plan going forward for conference play, where Evan is going to get the start behind the dish for all three of those games. I mean, just what he's able to bring to the table defensively, how he manages a game, just the kind of his presence back there, I think is helpful for the pitchers and everyone else, but expect to see him in that starting role on the weekend series moving forward.
You know, I love seeing that. And, you know, it was funny in your write-up, I kind of forget, because Evan came from a JUCO, but he's only a sophomore. He only played 1 year at the JUCO before coming here. And so you forget he is a little younger than you think of junior college guys. But you're right. I mean, just what he provides you on defense alone is worthwhile. And then he's been really showing good with late. You know, when he stays within himself and just tries to make contact, put the ball in play, he is a very, very good hitter. He's had some good timely hits, and he's been driving the ball a little bit more. So I'm all for seeing Evan get catch every day on the weekends.
And we see him in that cleanup spot batting fourth between Waters and Boucher, which is a pretty good spot to hit with that guy in front of you and the other guys up in the lineup, and then some good bats behind you with Boucher, Lavari, and Ticer and Stallings. I mean, that's a good spot to be in. And I think there was a noticeable difference defensively behind the dish this weekend with him there.
Yeah, and he's a switch hitter too, so he can provide that. They kind of go righty-lefty, you know, Edwards, Meyer, Waters, Holman switch hitter, Boucher, Lavari, then Tyson. It's more or less righty-lefty all the way through. So it's kind of hard for another team to bring in, you know, a lefty to face guys, because then, all right, fine, you might get our lefty, but then this guy's going to come up right-handed right after him.
Yeah, we just need to make sure there's no double headers in the conference play. Like, if we can keep it one game per day, we're good, because you know, Evan is a tough kid, and he would probably, you know, catch for all 18 in one day, but if we could avoid that, I think that would be ideal.
I mean, most everyone wants to avoid a doubleheader on a weekend, no matter what, but that's definitely an even more incentive for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to jump down to the game on Sunday. Georgia Southern was able to salvage a game from the series with a 2-1 victory. Another great pitching performance. Just the hitting was not quite there on Sunday.
You know, Ben Moore looked phenomenal. He started the game. I'd have to assume whatever kind of injury. I think they were saying it was a groin injury. Whatever he had going on, pretty clear. He looks healthy. I mean, he looked great to start the game. Bailey Metella came out. It looked phenomenal again. Jacob Gomez, 3 innings scoreless to finish it. You know, the only Trent had a little hiccup. He gave up a 2-run homer. It's like, okay, that happens. You know, I mean, I'm sure he's still feeling some kind of effect from a thumb. You could tell he didn't quite look comfortable, but he still looked pretty good. And so, you know, you give up a 2-run homer. Okay, that happens. You can't lose a game 2-1. That's not on the pitcher that gave up a home run. That's on the offense just didn't do it on Sunday.
Yeah, and the home run he gave up wasn't like just some towering shot to right. Like it got some wind help and it snuck over the fence and it was a home run. But like you said, giving up two runs in nine innings, you're going to win most of those games if that's all your pitching staff gives up.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take four runs over the weekend and expect to be sweeping every week. So that's just a fluke that happened. That was one my mom always gets frustrated when the team scores too many runs. She's like, well, they got to save some of those for later. It's like, Mom, that's the crazy, because they did it 3 days in a row. And I think she actually didn't say it about the third
I think
day.
Someone responded to me on Twitter and said, the bats are tired. Geez, give them a break. But I do want to give credit to Georgia Southern and their starting pitcher on Sunday, Ty Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. Seven innings pitched, no earned runs, gave up just four hits. The one run that did come in was unearned, six strikeouts, one walk, threw 93 pitches. And they kept him in there to finish out that last inning when I thought that they were going to make a move because his pitch count was already up there in the 90s. We got a double off the wall to put a runner in scoring position. I believe it was Maverick who hit the double. That was close to being a home run itself. And then they pinch hit Rowan Massey for Bryce Jones to get the matchup that they wanted. And Rowan hit an absolute laser. I mean, a screaming line drive. It just happened to be right at the shortstop.
It wasn't even right at the shortstop. The shortstop had to jump. He got all the air in the world to get that ball. That was just pure. You know, the guy made a great play. That's phenomenal. And Rowan really, he really went out and got that ball and still hit it hard. And that's just how that they just sometimes you just have the best luck on the day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a foot left, a foot right, a foot higher, and that's in the gap. And now we've tied the game. And we've got a runner on second. So I thought that was a good approach in a pinch hit spot though, to come up there and jump on a pitcher who was getting up there in pitch count up in the 90s, finally getting a little bit loose, leaving some stuff over the plate, and he jumped on it. Just unfortunately could not fall in for him there.
Yeah, I mean, that's one where sometimes that's just how baseball works. I mean, you put the exact right guy batting in the exact right time. He hit the ball great, and it just happened to get caught. That's the way baseball is sometimes, is that you can do everything well. It just didn't work out. I mean, it's like, all right, that's baseball. And their relief pitcher, the kid Joey White, pitched the last two innings. He did great too. So I mean, they really did have some phenomenal pitching for them on Sunday.
I was behind home plate for the last three innings of that game, and watching Joey White pitch. I mean, he's got some pretty nasty stuff. Like he was able to just basically backdoor on left-handed hitters to get that breaking ball in for a strike, and before you knew it, it was 0-2, and you didn't know what was coming. A lot of good late break. Definitely had a great day, and I guess they were to save some of their pitching from Friday and Saturday because they were not in competitive games and roll out some of their top arms for that final game on Sunday to steal it. But we actually talked about Ty Fisher on the preview last week that he was the Sunday guy, didn't have the best ERA, but had the lowest batting average against of all three starters. And we absolutely saw that play out with, you know, only four hits over seven innings for him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I figured whoever came out of the bullpen was going to be their best relief guy because they didn't need to use him Friday or Saturday. Yeah, Ty Fisher, I took a few pictures and you get a good idea what their delivery looks like. And he's got a weird delivery. I'm sure it looks odd coming to the batter.
Yeah, it's everything has run in late break. And I was glad that I was just standing behind the fence and not trying to hit that because I would have absolutely embarrassed myself. But I'll gladly take two out of three. I mean, we can do that every weekend series. We're in great shape.
You take two out of three every conference series, you'll be 20-10 in conference and probably be sitting pretty. So I'll take it. You know, obviously you'd like to get the sweep, but it's hard to sweep. I think there were two of them this weekend. Even Coastal Carolina came in and they lost one to JMU, you know, so it's not easy to sweep in conference.
Yeah, Southern Miss got a sweep. They're 3-0, somewhat of a controversial sweep because I think one game probably should have gone to Marshall, but there was a play at the plate involving a catcher blocking something and it got overturned and the game was over. And then Georgia State swept South Alabama. So those are the only two 3-0 teams. Everybody else is either 2-1 or 1-2. Then of course, South Alabama, Marshall are 0-3, but I mean, it's going to be pretty tight in those standings, I think, throughout the whole season, based on what I've seen.
It'll work itself out in the end, but I think you're right. It's just every single game is a rock fight in conference.
All right, fans, coming up next, we have our interview with Kenny Lavari, who you've heard a good bit about so far in today's episode. And then we'll give you a quick preview of the midweek game against Richmond and then the weekend road series against the Raging Cajuns. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
This episode of the Monarchist Podcast is brought to you by the Pride of ODU Collective. Their mission is to elevate the experience of student athletes through name, image, and likeness, while also elevating the fan experience. If you or your business are interested in getting involved, you can reach out to us directly or go over to theprideofodu.com. That is theprideofodu.com. Thank you for listening and go Monarchs.
Welcome back to the Hudson Homers podcast. We are lucky to be joined today by Old Dominion Baseball starting third baseman, Kenny Lavari. Kenny, thanks so much for jumping on with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, you come off a pretty impressive weekend, taking 2 out of 3 from Georgia Southern, getting run rule victories of all things on Friday and Saturday. How are the guys feeling coming off the weekend?
Really good. I think it was a good way for us to get our feet wet into Sun Belt play with a whole bunch of new guys this year who haven't maybe experienced Sun Belt baseball yet. So we got our feet wet and we had a pretty good time doing it.
For you personally, you had a crazy good week. I think I was putting all your stats together and it was something dumb, I'll tell you, in terms of stats. But was there anything particular that changed with your process this week, or was just kind of things finally coming together, seeing the ball well and having good at bats?
I think just sticking to it. I mean, obviously I got off to a little slower start than I would have liked, my worst in 4 years here, but just knowing that I'm able to do this, I've done it for 3 years prior to this. So just sticking to what I know works and trusting that eventually it'll come around, and it's starting to now.
Of course, we had the big time, you know, your brother Marco got on the field for the first time this week.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, this was the first time we've ever got to play competitive together. We played Little League and stuff like that, but senior year of high school would have been our first real chance to, and then COVID took that away from us. So getting to play with him for the first time in a game that meant something, because we did it in the fall a bunch, but it was just a really cool moment for me.
Yeah, he threw pretty well too. 2 scoreless innings to kind of close out that second game against Princeton. I mean, he looked pretty good up there. So I have to ask, have you all gone head-to-head since you've been at ODU?
We have. I think I'm 0-for-1 with 2 walks. He got me to pop out, and then he walked me twice. So I guess he has my number.
The on-base percentage there is still pretty solid. We got to keep an update on those stats, though, of you guys continuing to match up throughout the year.
Yeah.
Started the week in a pretty rough way, dropping the game to Princeton. I know the bats were going, the pitching not so much. What was the feeling within the team and the leadership of getting guys kind of letting that be the wake-up call for them to turn around and really just have a great rest of the week?
I think it's just – I mean, first of all, let me say this. The pitching wasn't fully the issue. Yeah, we didn't pitch as well as we could have, but we didn't play as good a defense as we could have. We had a few errors in that game that gave them a few more runs than they should have had, and if we don't make those, we probably win the game. So it wasn't fully on the pitching, but I think it is a good wake-up call just for the guys to know that anyone could beat us on any given day if we don't play well. And when we do play well, we could beat anyone on any given day.
Yeah, you definitely showed that by bouncing back the next day and beating Princeton pretty soundly there. And then, of course, what you did to a really good Georgia Southern team on Friday and Saturday. Like, I was thinking, all right, let's take 2 out of 3. Never in my wildest dreams, I think it'd be 2 11-1 run rule victories, because they got some dudes that can hit. They got some arms. Like, they're not going to finish in the lower half of the Sun Belt.
No, not at all. They've played a pretty tough schedule, too, so far. They've played some good teams and had some good games. So we just came out and played well. And like I said, that shows that we can beat anyone when we decide to play well.
Kenny, your mom shared a picture that I had taken from a camp at ODU back in 2018. So I guess you were probably about to go into your senior year, maybe about to go into your junior year. But it was you and Marco. You were about to pitch. Marco's giving you the ball. And she shared that along with the picture that I took this week of you giving Marco the ball where he's about to go to pitch. I just thought that was so cool. I didn't remember taking that picture.
Yeah, that is pretty cool how the roles have reversed, huh?
That's neat. I'm glad you guys get to play together. That's a big deal. We got you and Marco, and then Alex and Jake Gomez get to play together. It's always really cool to see the brothers get to play together.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it's awesome for all of us, just especially with them being young, showing them the way and showing them the way things are supposed to be done, and they can learn from us older brothers.
Now he's a lot like you when you first got to ODU. He's real quiet. Is he always like that, or is he kind of annoying little brother?
No, he's quiet. maybe not as quiet as he is at the field, but he's a relatively quiet kid.
We asked Jacob about that earlier. It sounds like it's a good thing that they split the brothers up so you all aren't living together.
Yeah, I think that was intentional.
That makes a lot of sense. Kind of let them pave their own way a little bit, but also little brother's not bothering you all the time asking you questions about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we lived together for 18 years. I think we can do 3 years without it, 4 years without it.
Yeah, I think you'll be all right there. We also talked to Jacob when we had him on the beginning of the season about how he kind of felt a lot of that 2021 team vibes from this team in terms of chemistry and kind of everyone on the right track. Did you get those same vibes preseason, and how's that playing out now?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe from a chemistry standpoint, but this team is not like that team in the sense of that team hit a lot of homers. This team's better at playing baseball, I think, than that team was. That team, don't get me wrong, we were really good at playing baseball, but we did live and die by the home run, I think, a little bit that year. And it worked out for us that year. But I think this year it's a little bit more of a sustainable brand of baseball that we play.
Yeah, you can definitely see that coming through, especially this week where the bats started clicking a little bit, that it's, you know, you guys can produce some runs when you really get things going.
I think this team has a chance to be really good. We pitched the ball really well. Our pitching has been amazing to start the year. We play pretty good defense. So we keep having offensive days like we did this weekend. We're going to be pretty good.
Well, speaking of pitching, we ever going to see you on the mound?
I'm getting ready. I'm getting close. I mean, I've been on the mound a little bit. The last few weeks have been hard because we played we're supposed to play Tuesday, Wednesday against William & Mary, so that was 5 games in a week. We played Tuesday, Wednesday against Princeton. It was a little bit harder for me to get off the mound. But I did throw Thursday a bullpen, and I threw a bullpen about a week and a half ago. So I'm getting there. I don't know where they're going to use me with this staff we got, because we're pretty dang good. But I'm going to be ready if they need me.
I was going to say, it's tough to get time on the mound with this pitching staff, because it feels like they just keep trotting out lefty getting strikeouts, righty getting strikeouts. I mean, that's got to feel pretty good as a position player, though, to know that your pitchers can back you up. You get in those 1-2-run leads where you've got those lockdown guys.
I think that that's important for us. We don't need to score 10 runs a game to win every night. I mean, there's going to be the days that we do, and they're still not going to let up runs. Like we saw this weekend, we won 2 games 11-1, and then the 1 game that we didn't, they still only gave up 2 runs. So our staff is pretty good.
Yeah, definitely some great arms on there. We had Jay Cassaday on a couple weeks ago, talking to him, and he kept talking about starting pitching. Then he actually got to start kind of in that opener role on Friday. I thought that was pretty cool and set things up pretty well for Hollibets the rest of the day on Friday.
Yeah, I think Jay's a great guy for that role. He's a veteran guy and doesn't let a lot of stuff bother him. And he did a great job easing us into the game on Friday night and letting us like get into the game before we gave the ball to Johnny.
All right, now we're going to ask everyone that comes on the podcast this question. So you're not the first, you won't be the last. But we know that the NCAA college football video game is coming out this summer.
Yeah.
Like long awaited return for guys like me who played a ton in college and afterwards. But I was also a big fan of the baseball version of that, the college baseball game. So if at some point in the future the college baseball game comes back and you're on a roster, what is your overall rating? And would you just absolutely dominate the guys on your team playing that?
I think I'm not really much of a video game player, but the games I do play are sports games. So I think I'd be good. I don't know. I'd like to be maybe somewhere around 90, 87, 90. I feel like it's a fair rating.
I like that. I like that little push the power number up a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
What's the arm rating?
99.
Yeah, I was going to say, it got to be 99, right?
I got a plus arm.
Yeah.
Oh, love it. I know on MLB The Show, you can do the two-way player. So, I mean, you're already set up and primed for that. You can be the first one in the college game.
Yeah, but I'm like a fake two-way because I do it all, but I haven't really done it yet. I have one collegiate inning in the Cape Cod League, and I haven't thrown a Division I inning yet.
Well, I know that we are all waiting the long-anticipated return of Kenny Lavari to the mound for ODU. We've been hearing about it for years and years and years, so we're excited to hopefully see that at some point here in the next couple weeks.
Me too.
Yeah. Now, I imagine you have not played at Louisiana before, right?
Yes, I have not been there.
All right. Coach Finwood said that it's a pretty crazy environment, kind of on par with what you've seen at Southern Miss for some of their games, I think, with a little more French and Farmer Fran gibberish mixed in there. But is there anything different that you all are doing from like a team perspective of getting prepped to go and travel on Thursday and head down there for a three-game set?
I don't think so. I mean, I think baseball is baseball. If you're going to let stuff like that bother you, you're probably not going to be successful in the first place. So, I mean, I think all it does is bring a little bit more life to the game. It shouldn't really affect us too much as a team. I think we're tougher than that mentally.
You're on the left side of the infield with Kyle Edwards, and the two of you make some pretty crazy plays over there. On Friday, Kyle made that stop deep in the hole as the rain just started falling and threw just a cannon shot to first to get the guy out. What's it like playing next to him, knowing he is going to be flying all around you, scooping things up?
It's awesome. Me and Kyle have a little inside joke whenever one of us get a ground ball and get the guy out. Although I have made a few more errors than I would like this year to start the year, but we're going to clean that up. But me and Kyle make a joke that if you hit the ball to the left side of the infield, you're out. You don't even got to run to first base. Me and Kyle like to joke around about that.
You're not wrong, though. It's a very, like, big league-esque side of the field. I mean, it's that ball's going to die over there.
We make the joke that you're better off hitting us a routine three-hopper, and we might miss that one. But if you got side to side, we're probably not missing it.
For sure. Yeah, you're really good at the I always call it the Chipper Jones play, going in on the ball and just bare hand slinging it. You're great at that play.
Yeah, those are the fun ones.
No, you play a little bit of first base here recently. I mean, I think you only got like one game here maybe during the year, but how was that playing at first?
It was new, but I might be back over there at some point. I don't know, depending on how the pitching goes. Obviously, I'd rather be at third base, but if my arm needs it or that's what's best for the team, then I'll head back over there and I'll like it.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is you know how to field. If you put a guy who's already really good at fielding, you already have good footwork, you know. People think you can just go play first base. You can't.
I will say it's harder than I thought it was. It's harder than I gave people who play over there credit. I mean, I guess if you play over there every day, it might get easier. But going from the left side to the right side of the infield is not as easy as some might think.
Yeah, I get real frustrated watching guys feet when they play first base. Nothing makes me – a lot of right-handed first basemen do it where they put their left foot on the bag trying to catch the ball with their left hand. It's like, man, you just – cut off like 2 feet of stretch.
Yeah.
If you built any sympathy for the guys over there at first base now that you've done it with someone whipping the cannon shot, you know, plus arm from across the diamond?
I mean, yeah, for sure. I would have to assume if you play there every day, it does get easier. But for guys like me and Boo who aren't used to playing over there, it does take a bit of an adjustment to figure out. There's a lot more footwork stuff. Third base, you just kind of react. But first base, it's a lot more technique and stuff that it requires to be good at.
You going to play in the Cape again after the spring here?
I don't think so. I've been went three times. I don't know what my plan is yet. I guess we'll see how the year goes, and I'll decide that from there.
Okay. I was just curious. Are you going to be trying to play pro ball? Is that the hope still?
That's the plan.
All right. Let's go. I have said, Manny, I'll say this to you, but I do not understand – why every scout in the world isn't out watching you every time. I don't know what a pro team could want more out of a guy. Left-handed hitting, outstanding fielder, great teammate. I love the way you talk on the field. I just – it's one of those things that makes me not understand the pro game anymore, that you're not – the fact that you're here for your senior year, frankly, is crazy to me. I'm glad you're here. Love you, buddy, but I don't get it.
Maybe everything happens for a reason. Hopefully I'll get my chance at the end of this year, but maybe it was just – God telling me to play with my brother for 1 year. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Okay. I didn't go pro last year, but I'm here now and I'm loving it. I got one last go at it. I'm here with Marco and the rest of the guys. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, like I said, much worse things to get to play with your brother.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Yeah, we're definitely hoping for a nice long run into the summer there, extend that out a little bit so you don't have to worry about the Cape early on. But Kenny, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your day on a very busy travel week to come chat with us. We greatly appreciate it. So thank you.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
I want to chat through our midweek this week with Richmond coming down to the Bud. They're 9-10 so far to start the season, but interesting fact, this is going to be their first road game. They opened with a 19-game homestand.
I mean, that's just a benefit of they have a pretty nice field, and a lot of these northern teams want to come down and play. I mean, I see Niagara came down and Mount St. Mary's, Boston College, Sacred Heart, Central Connecticut. I mean, these all sound like cold places. I don't know where Marist is. I'm assuming it's cold. Princeton. I mean, yeah, Cornell, a lot of cold sounding places.
Yeah. Marist, I believe that they're up there in New York somewhere. I think I've followed them for basketball in the past, but yeah, but to go 9-10 against maybe not super tough competition all at home, I'm a little surprised that they're 9-10. I thought they have a little bit better record. I think they started off getting swept in four games by Niagara. So I guess they broke out of that cold up there in nearly Canada and decided to come down and take it out on the Spiders.
They also, you're talking about first year with a new head coach, and that's always a change. I mean, I look through the roster, and you think a team in the middle of Virginia, I'd recognize some names. If they have very few players from Virginia, so I'm sure it's just kind of a transition year for them.
Yeah, and they did take 2 out of 3 against Cornell over the weekend, so they're on a little bit of a warm-up streak. But, you know, as we talked about with Princeton, we just have to show up and play ball and play well and do our thing and come out with a win. Don't take them lightly. Don't overlook them. I hope that they have learned that lesson from Tuesday last week.
I mean, I always feel like whenever you play Richmond, it's a game you should win. And, you know, Richmond plays them tough. They're definitely one. Every time they play Richmond, especially when they play up in Richmond, they play really, really hard. So, again, like I said, got to show up and be prepared to play and to beat them.
Yeah, they do have some talent. They've announced their starter. I'm going to butcher his last name. Logan Yumker. He's 6'8". He's a big dude. He's got a 1.93 ERA over 18 and two-thirds innings, 17 strikeouts, 11 walks. So they're definitely not trotting out any kind of scrub here on Tuesday that's going to be batting practice. I mean, anytime some guy's throwing from 6'8", it's going to be difficult to hit.
He needs more vowels in that name. It's Y-M-K-E-R. That's not enough letters.
Yeah, I'm no expert on pronouncing things, but I'm going to go with Yumker and probably be wrong, but that's okay.
I'm thinking,
either way,
I'm thinking he's gonna be a problem on the ball. I think it's Imker. That's my guess. I don't know how I'll prove that, but it's my guess.
We'll have to listen out and hear if Jack gets it right on the call on Tuesday.
Sure.
Yeah. But they've got four guys in their lineup that are hitting over 300, so they can definitely hit the ball. One guy I wanted to highlight, DJ Pacheco, is a junior outfielder for them. He's hitting 327. 1.100 OPS, 3 bombs, 11 ribbies, and he's 4-for-4 stealing bases. So he's got some speed too. But really, the top four in their lineup that play regularly, they can hit. So I don't think this is going to be a game where we're lighting them up with pitching. Like, I think they're going to put the ball in play and see what happens. It's probably going to be a pretty good ball game on Tuesday at the Bud.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of my favorite mascot and logo. I love the Richmond logo. Not a huge fan of the school. They're kind of got that. They think they're UVA. They got the arrogant jerk thing. They were very rude last time I was up there. So I'm all for beating Richmond.
I think when they built their new football stadium, a lot of their fans were buying 3-season tickets just so they didn't have to sit next to anybody. So that was always really fun to interact with up there in Richmond. But yeah, we got to show up. We got to play well. I think if we put 10, 11, 12 runs on the board, we should cruise pretty well. But they're not going to make it easy for us, and they are absolutely a step up in competition from Princeton last week.
Absolutely. But then, into the weekend, we got our first road trip weekend.
Yes, heading down to see the old Raging Cajuns. And Coach Finwood seemed pretty excited about the trip. He said he had some good memories there. He knows the crowd is pretty crazy and a good atmosphere. So guys are kind of get that first Sunbelt road trip crowd experience here, like you see at Southern Miss sometimes and some of the other programs that always have great fan turnout. But they are 11-8 to start the season. They just finished taking 2 out of 3 from Arkansas State. Pretty good series there. They dropped the Friday game 11-8, came back and won Saturday 7-6, and won on Sunday 8-5. They have a midweek game on Tuesday as well against Southern.
Wherever that is.
Southern University. I know I've bet on them in basketball. I couldn't tell you exactly where they are, but I imagine they're somewhere in the South.
I enjoy it. They actually have a Wednesday game too. They play McNeese, which again, wherever that is.
Now I know that one's in Louisiana because their basketball team made the NCAA tournament, and they're coached by the fugitive himself, Will Wade, who was at VCU for a while at LSU, canned for NCAA violation. So I at least know where McNeese State is. That's probably a good little rivalry game there for Louisiana. Yeah.
And I see that the Louisiana, they got to play a weekend at Minute Maid Park in Houston. That's pretty awesome. Got to play Vanderbilt, LSU, and Houston. And not surprisingly, lost all three of those games. But not really blowouts. Played all pretty close games against really good. I mean, as here, Vanderbilt was number 9, LSU was number 3. So even losing those games, that's a big deal. Good for them.
I'm hoping those early season tournaments become a much bigger deal because they're always fun to watch. They've done one at Minute Maid in Houston for a while. They do one up in Arlington at the Rangers' new stadium. So I would love to see that. Like any indoor or warm weather place, go get 4 to 6 pretty good teams, throw in the mix, and kind of do what basketball does with those multi-team events. I would love to see ODU get into one of those and have a nice little away road trip.
Well, ODU's been in them before, not in the big league stadium, but they've hosted, you know, some of those weekends. The last time that Virginia Tech played at ODU was in one of those. And that same weekend we had Kentucky back when they were really good. They had A.J. Reed, who ended up being a first-round pick of the Astros and I think was probably playing for Houston the next year. And then out of baseball, like a year after that, it was a very odd career he had. But he hit a home run that I don't think has landed yet.
I remember A.J. Reed. He definitely had some power. Whenever he did make contact, he crushed it in the pros. I just don't think he made quite enough contact to stay around for a while. But I know that there used to be a lot of early season tournaments down in like Myrtle Beach at the Ripken Fields. They would do them down in Florida. But we'd love to see that trend continue of using major league ballparks to have those. Because it just has a cool feel to it. And you get some matchups that you normally don't. Especially with some of those top teams.
Yeah, anything that makes college baseball more prominent is which, you know, it's funny. There's a meme going around this week about how, you know, the NCAA banning bat flips and the celebrations. And those were the things that were going on social media that were making it big. Like, college baseball in the last few years was really building up a lot of steam. And it seems like a lot of that kind of got killed by these, you know, arbitrary rules. And so, like, I saw a guy, I think the other day, did a bat flip and got ejected from a game. And it's disappointing. I mean, you know, you're putting grandpa mentality on the modern day. It's like, you know, I probably 10 years ago would have been like anybody, I don't want to see bat flips and all that. But, you know, the reality is, like, it's just guys having fun. You know, it's like, hey, you don't want to get bat flipped on, don't give up the home run. So it's a little sad. That just kind of made me think of that these things that could help grow the game that were kind of limiting.
Yeah, especially with the talent that's stockpiling in college baseball with the shortening of the draft and some of the other things we've talked about. But yeah. I just wish there was more discretion on what constitutes an ejection for a bat flip. Like, you know, if you're chucking the bat at the pitcher or throwing it 50 feet in the air, then yeah, sure. Like that's a problem. But some of the ones I've seen ejections for are like, they're nothing. That's just taking the fun out of it and ruining a good moment for somebody. I think you got to make it as entertaining as possible. And like you said, you don't want to give up the bat flip. Don't give up the bomb. Or like, you know, there might be some consequences for your bat flip later. We'll see. Don't make this the no fun league like we've seen in some other
sports. And the part that bugs me the most, the NCAA, the people who are banning it, would be the first ones to be sharing it. You know, they were the ones that had the clips and the pictures and they had it all up and they were shoving it all over social media, which they should have been. I mean, you want to sell the sport and then they're the same ones that ban it. So that's frustrating. Yeah,
that reminds me of like when NFL films used to share photos of like the biggest hits of the week. And there were just these helmet to helmet concussion inducing hits. They're like, we have to do something to get rid of concussions in the game. Well, you seem to like putting them on the video clips out there pretty frequently. But anyway, we got sidetracked there. We'll get back to bat flipping at another time, but likely 3 starting pitchers. Don't know what particular order they're going to be in this week, but Andrew Herman is their big lefty, 3.04 ERA, 31 strikeouts, 11 walks. He's had a pretty good season so far. Carson Fluno, a 3.66 ERA. Those are two of their top 3 arms that you're going to see at some point starting over the weekend. Then on the offensive side, Kyle DeBarge, 1.001 OPS, 8 bombs, 23 ribbies. Dude is a monster.
He was a name I remembered immediately when I looked at the stats here. I was like, I must know his name from last year. It's because he had a monster year last year. Well, he's already got more home runs than he had last season. So he's off to a heck of a start.
Yeah, they can absolutely hit. And Trey LaFleur is another one to watch out for. He's hitting, you know, just a casual 404 with a 1.134 OPS, 3 home runs, 13 ribbies. So, surprise, surprise, we're going up against a tough team in conference play this weekend. And this time you get to do it on the road.
The roads are great. Guys get a chance to go bond. They go down there, get some catfish and some Boudon, which I don't know what that is, but somebody from Louisiana was telling me they love Boudon, so go and I don't know what it is, but have fun with it. But you get that chance to go and get out of your element, only focus on the baseball, and really just be with your guys. So go in there and have a great weekend.
There'll be some nerves and some anxiety, especially if that crowd on Friday at 6 is is really cranking. But I mean, that those are the environments you're going to play in the Sun Belt, and the conference tournament's going to be the same way. And you know, if we end up in a regional, it's not going to be at ODU. So there's going to be some hostile fan bases that you're dealing with. And just love to see our guys, you know, get used to that and then go thrive in them. Kind of like the way Jacob Gomez thrived when we were down in South Carolina in 21 and, you know, being able to chirp a little bit back and have fun like that. So be a good experience for them.
That's where you really see what guys are made of, too. It's funny enough, I went and saw Tanner Shadell, who is our 2024 commit. He plays at Cape Henry. Probably going to be like a third baseman outfielder. He was pitching that night, actually, and Cape Henry ended up winning the game there at Grassfield. But Grassfield, there were some high school kids that decided to come over to the Cape Henry side and start talking a bunch of mess and chirping at the players. And the Cape Henry players, you know, they were just kind of laughing and talking back. And it just showed like there was a level of just, we got this, and complete comfort and confidence, because this is the guys who've been there. They won the state championship last year. I think might have won it 2 years ago. There's probably some kids on there. The seniors probably have two state championships already. Probably line for another one. I mean, so right there, if a high school kid can show that level of just like composure, then I guarantee we got some guys at our college team that are going to be able to have that composure and enjoy that moment, enjoy that experience of, you know, a lot of our players, when you talk to them, they have Southern Miss is one of those places where other teams go in and the fans really get after them. But if you talk to our guys, they love playing Southern Miss. They say the people are actually, when you talk to them, genuinely nice, love baseball, and they're just rooting for their team, and that's part of the whole thing for them.
I've interacted with a lot of Southern Miss fans. I've had several invites to go down there for football, baseball, whatever it is. They truly are awesome baseball fans. Their stadium is cool. What they do out beyond right field, where they just basically back the trucks up and have tailgates to watch the game, is pretty awesome. I would love to see our crowd and our fan base get to that point when the new ballpark comes rolling out, because it makes it a very, very fun environment to play baseball.
Baseball in the South is just something special. When you watch, you know, like Southern Miss, and I'm sure we'll see it this weekend on TV with Louisiana, and you watch some of those SEC games, and it's a whole different vibe, and it's really what we all want to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully they get off to a good start, can find a way to go down to Louisiana, win the series. Because you know, you win your first two series, you put yourself in a pretty good spot for the rest of the season. Give yourself a little bit of breathing room there. Before we wrap up here, a couple of things for you. Go to odumonarchist.com and click on the store button. You will see a lot of good baseball merch. We just added a new shirt this week. All of the proceeds from that go back to the program, either through ODAF or through the Pride of ODU NIL Collective. So great way to get some cool gear and also support ODU baseball. And then there's some other shirts out there for some other teams. We have a lot more on deck for that. And then we're also doing a Monarchist Bracket Challenge. If you go to any of our social media feeds, you will see the invite for that. You can go in there, compete against other ODU fans. The password on there is VCU Sucks. So you'll feel right at home logging into that for college basketball. CB, anything on your end? Where can people find your stuff?
I'm glad you told me the pad, because I needed to do a bracket. I didn't realize it was a password, so I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm about to go set that up so we can see how badly I can lose. But, you know, for me, just, you know, keep looking at CB Sports Photography on Instagram, Facebook. And we definitely always try to make those co-posts on the Monarchist. You can typically see them on the Monarchist pages. High school baseball started, so I've already gotten to one game, hoping to get to a few more, and hoping to see some ODU tennis next weekend while these guys are on the road. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to another beautiful week of enjoying ODU baseball.
I think ODU tennis set a record the other day for the fastest win in program history. I want to say it was Arkansas State. Like, they clinched the match in like 20 or 25 minutes. Something stupid. They are awesome. If you get a chance to go over to the tennis complex and check them out, they are very good. They win a lot. They're a lot of fun to watch. But I think that will do it for us on the Hudson Homers podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you're not already, make sure to subscribe. We'll have a contest here coming up in the next couple of weeks for anyone who leaves us a review. So feel free to go in there, leave us a nice 5-star review. If you leave us a 1-star, I'm not sending you anything, but 5-star, I'll gladly do it.
We'll send you something, but you won't want it.
Yeah, it'll be a box and it won't smell good. I'll tell you that. All right. Awesome. Well, I'm Gary. Thanks so much for listening, and go Monarchs.
Hey, I'm CB. We appreciate you. Go Monarchs.